Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for May 4th, 2014. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me, as she always does, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone. Greetings from Atlanta.
And our special guest this week from Peach Pundit, joining us for at least the second time to talk some Georgia Republican politics, mainly Mike Hastinger. Welcome, Mike.
Hello, everybody, from Tucker, Georgia.
Yeah, good to have you back on, Mike. I think it was a few years ago you were our guest and enlightened us on particularly the Republican side of the aisle here in Georgia, and we'll do that once again. And let's just dive right in. The U.S. Senate race is one of probably the most interesting races nationwide as far as a primary goes, because you have so many candidates, and not just any old candidates. You have three sitting congressmen, a major CEO, governor's, former governor's brother. I mean, you know, at least I guess you'd have to say four and also, of course, a former statewide elected officer. So I think you have at least five what you call high-profile candidates and then some others that you're probably more familiar with than Catherine and I are. You know, we see some polls coming out, but you're more on the ground with, you know, the Republican inner workings. Where do you think this race is right now?
Well, I think this race is headed to a runoff. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The number of candidates in the race just mathematically dictate that there's going to be a runoff, and that's really going to be the acid test. What we're seeing right now is who can pull the biggest chunk of the Republican voters into their camp, and it's splitting into two. One, kind of the party-based, far right, very social conservative, very adamant, very angry wing. And we're going to see on May 20th just how large that wing is. The other side is your, I don't want to say traditional, but I can't think of a better word, so your traditional Republican Chamber of Commerce, pro-business, anti-tax, not quite so concerned about the social issues kind of voters. And that is going to map how the primary runoff actually works.
Yes. Now let's put some names onto this. As far as the Tea Party, I think originally a lot of people thought, well, that's going to be Paul Brown was going to do well with that group. But obviously his poll numbers are not very good. So obviously either there's other people vying for that Tea Party vote, or the Tea Party vote is not what it once was. And then, of course, we got, I guess, your traditional Republicans. Who are each group lining up behind?
Well, I think they're still making up their minds. Right? We're still 3 weeks away from the actual election day. But you see, Paul Brown has – if there's one thing you can say about Paul Brown, he has been consistent. From day one, not just of this campaign, but frankly from when he's been elected, he has stayed on message probably better than anyone. Now, he is not welcomed warmly in the traditional Republican establishment, but he is welcomed warmly by two wings, one, the traditional Tea Party folks, and two, the Libertarian, the Liberty Republicans, the constitutional conservative sort of voters, and he's appealed to them with his record as a congressman, and he continues to appeal to them as a candidate. Karen Handel makes a stab at those same social conservatives because of her stance on abortion, because she has been pro-life and has been beaten up for not being pro-life enough. So she sort of captures some of those voters, but not quite all of them. Kingston is a well-respected congressman. There's nobody who can say that he's not a Republican or he's not Republican enough. The problem with Kingston is that he was on the Appropriations Committee. So if you want to attack him as a taxer and a spender, well, he's got a record of having voted for appropriations because that was his job. So he's a little bit vulnerable to sort of the non-thinking voters on that side of the aisle. Gingrich has represented a huge portion of the state over his career and his redistricting, and he has appeal geographically and philosophically. And then you look at Purdue, and frankly, he's a wild card. He is the Chamber of Commerce candidate. There's no question about it. Successful businessman, successful CEO. All of those skills translate into being a great governor. I don't know if they translate into being a great senator, but he's run a very, very smart campaign. If I had to put a bet down right now, I would say that there is going to be a runoff. I just don't know if it's going to be between Handel and Kingston, or Kingston and Gingrich, or Brown and Kingston. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, of course, I got more questions on this thing, but I want to move over to Catherine and let her ask some questions about the Senate race in particular.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I want to ask you about Jack Kingston, because I have been, you know, I've followed him for a long time just because he's kind of one of those pretty visible congressmen. You know, he's been on Bill Maher. He's sort of out there, and, you know, I don't agree with him about probably anything, but I don't dislike him. He seems like a likable kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been kind of surprised by the campaign, or the not the campaign so much as the advertising that he's done. I feel like he has aged himself. Like, I think of him as I don't know how old he is. He's probably about my age, somewhere, you know, around, like, in his 50s, I assume, maybe a little older than that. But he seems to have run this campaign that makes him look older, which I think is a little bit of a mistake. Like these commercials where he's driving that old Buick station wagon around, he looks like
right.
a grandpa, and he may well be a grandfather. But I'm just kind of surprised by that. It doesn't seem to be the way to attract. I mean, I think he probably has older voters because I think he does fit that sort of, you know, I know you, I hesitate to use the word traditional too, but I think he's got those sort of Chamber of Commerce, he's got some of those Chamber of Commerce kind of Republican votes.
Right, right.
And I would think that he could also attract some of the younger voters who may not have the same social, you know, the same views on social issues as, you know, like Paul Brown or Karen Handel. So do you have any insight into why, into any of that?
Sure. The two things. One, the median age of voters across the country, I think the median age of voters is 51, which is really surprising when you stop and think about that in terms of a political campaign. You know, you may be driven by the John Stewart demographic or the Stephen Colbert demographic in terms of what you think about and what you react. But the voters, they're much older than that. And in a Republican primary, in Georgia, you're probably looking at a median age that gets close to 60, which is where Jack is. I think he's 59 years old.
Yeah.
The second thing is, if your main weakness in appealing to Republican voters statewide in Georgia is that you've been a spender because of your position on the Appropriations Committee, well, what do? You message yourself as an old cheapskate. You drive the same car. You don't know what Tupperware is. You think hand-me-down for a star, you know, and that's exactly what he's doing. And that is going to appeal to, look, we're still in a horrible recession. People are still scrimping and saving. my mother used to call it the green stamp days, right, where you had S&H green stamps.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody remember those.
Oh, but, I do. I remember buying a suitcase with them when I was a kid. Very exciting.
We're both dating ourselves here.
Yes.
But, you know, that kind of appeal, whether it's – that makes very good political sense for Jack. You appeal to older voters, and you appeal to them as scrimping and saving. The Buick Roadmaster hasn't been available for years, but a lot of those voters remember that because it was a luxury station wagon. I mean, shoot, when's the last time you saw a station wagon for sale?
Yeah, you don't see them very often.
Or a Buick, for crying out loud. Those voters, though, they remember Buick and they remember the Roadmaster, and they.
Well,
like,
you know, that really does make sense now that you know, clarify that. You know, it just surprised me when they first came out. I was like, geez, he looks like a grandpa. He looks like he's trying to sell himself as a grandpa, and I guess he is. So.
Yep. Yep.
And now here's I was kind of surprised that I think, now you didn't say. I think it might be Purdue Handel in the runoff.
Well, I'll repeat my rule if I haven't before. There are only two kinds of predictions in politics, lucky ones and wrong ones.
Right.
And you can't tell what's going to happen. Nate Silver doesn't know who's going to make this runoff, and I promise you that. It could be Purdue and Handel. It could be Purdue and Gingrey. It could be Gingrey and Brown. We just don't know. There's another factor at play that has nothing to do with any of the candidates or their messages or how they're reaching out to the voters, and that is the date. May 20th is the earliest primary date in Georgia history, and that's going to affect who actually shows up. You have local races all over the state that are going to drive up turnout, but May 20th means that your soccer moms and your PTA dads and everybody else is not on vacation. They're here, and they're getting hammered. They're getting robocalled. They're seeing TV ads from everybody to go vote in this primary. I think that may change the makeup of the electorate because primary voters in general tend to be the purists, the hardest core, the ones who drink the most Kool-Aid. But by moving it up early, you've got people who may not vote in the primary normally who will now participate, and you may see some unpredictable results.
The other piece that I don't think is going to make much difference, but I do know a handful, and, you know, these are my inside baseball political people. I do know a handful of Democrats who either live in Cobb County and they've got no Democrats to vote for unless they were interested in the Senate race, who have indicated that they might pull a Republican ballot for the primary to vote in the Senate race. I don't know who they're planning on voting for, but
The open primary system in Georgia allows for crossover voting. I love it because there's opportunity for shenanigans.
I really think
full disclosure, I crossed over and voted in the Democrat primary at least twice, both times to vote against Cynthia McKinney because I live in DeKalb County and she was my congresswoman at the time. And so I've cast a ballot for Hank Johnson and for Denise Majette. And Republicans look at me and say, well, you voted in a primary for a Democrat. And I said, well, I live in DeKalb. I really didn't have any choice. That is another factor that throws all of the predictions into really a cocked hat. Nobody's truly engaged right now, even though we're only, 3 weeks out, 16 days, I guess. People are just now focusing on who they want to vote for governor, for senator, and for anything else. They're not paying any attention. They haven't been paying any attention, and now they're starting to get engaged.
Yeah, well, I kind of have a poll-based question about two candidates, so I'll ask it as one. You can answer it separately. It looks like Karen Handel has been making a move. I do know that she seems to have more of an online presence as far as YouTube spots that play before you can watch a video, so you're kind of forced to watch them, unlike if you DVR commercials. Mm-hmm. A lot of ads on AJC and just almost anything else, just more ads than any of the other candidates. At one point, it seemed like she had more than all of them combined. At the same time, Phil Gingrich seems to have never caught on in the polls. Now, there may be something we're not seeing. Why do you think Karen Handel has risen, and why do you think Phil Gingrich never has yet in this race?
The knock on Karen Handel has always been that she's had trouble raising money. That was her from her very first foray. The first news stories I can recall about Handel was that she had trouble raising money. And she has struggled, and I apologize, I don't have her exact figures at the top of my mind right now, but she has not raised as much money, and she does not have as much money to spend as Gingrich, Kingston, or Perdue. But she has made the smartest use of whatever money she has been able to raise. And she has made very good use of earned media events. Sarah Palin's endorsement and visit, Jan Brewer's endorsement and visit, and she did them at the right time. If momentum can win a spot in the runoff, Handel has timed it absolutely perfectly. And you have to be extra careful when you don't have a lot of money. So I think that's a tip of at least my hat to her campaign team, because they've been very smart and they've made the best use of their resources.
Okay, the flip side of that, Phil Gingrich, he's kind of lingering in the polls. Sometimes he's dead last of those five serious contenders. Why is he not caught on yet, and will he?
You know, that's a mystery that has even those of us on the Republican side of the aisle in Georgia scratching our heads. Gingrich is a solid conservative. He could have been a congressman forever. He could have run for governor and been a very credible candidate. He jumped into the Senate race, and, you know, he had a big shakeup of his campaign staff, I want to say about 3 months ago. And he's just never seemed to find the song that he wants to sing. It's been he's a conservative. It's been I'm going to repeal Obamacare or go home. It's been, you know, this new ad he's got is with this woman who lost her son in Iraq. And I don't see a lot of voters connecting Phil Gingrich with the death of a veteran in Iraq and wanting to vote for him for U.S. Senate. It's just
that ad doesn't ring well, I don't think.
Yeah, it just seems like kind of a clunky message, and that's been Gingrich's downfall. We won't know if it's downfall till May 20th, but that's been Gingrich's hardest thing to overcome is why him. You understand why Handel. You understand why Perdue. You understand why Kingston. You don't understand why Gingrich. You even understand why Brown. All of them have a clear motivation and something that they want to accomplish as a senator. Everybody gets that. Gingrich, it's like he's sort of the oh yeah candidate. Oh yeah, and Gingrich. I don't know if that's fair to Phil. He's a great congressman. I've met him several times. I respect him and admire him. But I'm scratching my head over his campaign.
Just FYI, I just looked up Karen Handel's financials. As of March 31st, which was the last filing, she had raised a little over just over $900,000 and has just under $300,000 on hand.
Well,
just kind of a if you want to comment on that.
Well,
but that was March
31st.
There's a lot of time since then. So
there's a lot of time since March 31st. We don't know how those numbers have changed. I imagine the cash on hand number has dropped quite a bit. But at that last reporting, I remember reading that Perdue had a couple of million ready to spend. I think Kingston had a couple of million ready to spend. I think Gingrey had a couple of million ready to spend. And that's where the money is going.
To Gingrey, those ads, to me, it just seemed like, oh, well, he was a good congressman. He did what he was supposed to do as a congressman. Like,
right.
To me, they were just sort of proof of performance as a congressman, not any, vision for what he would do as a senator. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were fine if he was running for Congress again to show that, see, I'm a good congressman. But I didn't think they showed any vision for what he had as a senator. That was just my impression.
As a Republican, I have to say I'm thrilled to death with Phil Gingrey's performance as a congressman. I really am. As a political consultant,
I think you're probably alone on that. In this,
I have no doubt. But as a political consultant, I do have to say I look at the messaging of his campaign, the tone of his campaign, and a complete lack of definition, and I scratch my head. I think, Senate seats don't come up very often, especially open ones. And if you're in Congress, maybe you want to be in the Senate. And I think that it looks like well, everybody expected me to do it, so I had to do it, and this is what I'm doing. And you're delivering the basics, but I have not yet seen a compelling message from Gingrey. In my opinion, the voters may have a completely different one, and we'll know on May 21st.
That's right.
Yes, I guess just to get out, yes, no question. There's two more candidates, Art Gardner and Derek Grayson. Do they combined break out of single digits, yes or no?
Now, listen, I have deep respect for anybody who puts their name on a ballot. I always have, because that's a terrible, awful thing to do. It's like I always say running for office is an unnatural act performed in public. And it's just funny to see Gardner and thoughtful, serious, deep-thinking ideas and being a moderate. And, the big knock on him is that he's been underfunded and he's a, quote, long shot. Well, he is, but his ideas are solid. Now, Grayson, the minister of truth, he calls himself on Twitter and maybe his YouTube channel, TMOT. He is a liberty candidate, libertarian-leaning guy. He is very passionate about what he believes. I don't think he gets to sing. Well, I don't think he draws as many people as he thinks he can draw. And I'll just leave it there diplomatically. I think Grayson might surprise people. Gardner. I think Gardner might surprise people. His ideas are solid. If he could get them out there in front of people and take 3 minutes to explain them, he might have a shot.
Well, he's only got, as of March 31st, he only had $7,000 on hand, so he doesn't have a lot of money to get that message out.
Well, and then we get into the reality of politics. So
right.
I revise and amend my comments. No. Combined, they don't get into double digits.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's move on to the governor's race. And there, that race is just totally different. It's an incumbent that I think, as far as maybe Democratic voters and even some independent voters, is not necessarily that popular. But within the Republican Party, his approval rating is pretty solid, Nathan Deals, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And yet two candidates have stepped forward to run against him. One, a constitutional officer, John Barge, who probably could have, had a better shot at remaining in office than he will winning governor. And then the other, a mayor of a decent-sized city of Dalton, and they're both running, with real, anger at wanting to do it better than Nathan Deal. Am I missing something? Is the polls missing something? Or is this thing, Nathan Deal gets close to 60% or more on Election Day?
Actually, my firm and another group partnered up to do a poll head-to-head, Carter versus Deal, among, and we only polled Republican primary voters. They had to have voted in Republican primaries in the past. If they'd ever voted in the Democrat primary, we didn't ask them the question. And it was surprising the level of anger. You would expect, you know, a Republican governor in a red state like Georgia to have the faithful behind him. And they are, but not at the level you would expect. You'd expect 85%. He's at 79 among the Republicans. And there is a certain amount of Tea Party slash libertarian slash Kool-Aid drinking, I'll just call them that, wing of the Republican Party that's very angry at Deal. When you couple that with the traditional partisan shots that Jason Carter has been taking, he's been doing a very good job just campaign-wise. You've got a surprising amount of – it's probably double the amount of dissatisfaction with Deal on the Republican side of the aisle that it should be. Now, that all sounds horrible and poor. You know, he's on the ropes, and there's no way. He's the incumbent governor. He can pull more levers than, you know, any political consultant could ever dream of. And he can make things happen, and he can make himself look very good, and he can command media attention in a way that no one else in Georgia can. And he's very, very good at that. Look at the snowstorm. Snowstorm 1, he had egg on his face. Snowstorm 2, he was all over it. He was managing that crisis like you would not believe. And he learned his lesson. And so what do people take away? Well, he screwed up with the surprise, but he learned his lesson and did it better the second time. That's not a losing equation for voters.
Yes. And so of those two candidates, John Barge and David Pennington, which one's going to, you know, take more of the vote, do you think?
I think Pennington. I think Barge, you have to remember, he was sort of the accidental state school superintendent. He was elected statewide, but it was kind of a fluky campaign that put him in that position. The teachers in Georgia are very fond of Barge, and he was one of them, and he understands them, and they've respected him and they admired him. And when Governor Deal, as governor, had to change the state employees insurance policy to save money because of budget constraints, the teachers got hit just as hard as everybody. But teachers in Georgia, they're probably worth a million votes. And that kind of resonates with Deal, and that's why you've seen what he's done on correcting the issue and giving the teachers more options on their insurance plan. And sort
yeah,
of
but he vetoed that. He vetoed that the other day.
Was that one of those 10 vetoes?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and if you mean the options that I saw back in, I think it was October, those weren't good choices. They were all awful stuff.
Oh,
that
hey,
listen. Before the correction, if you will. Yeah.
You're talking policy and not politics now, and I don't have those
yeah.
details. So
yeah.
I apologize. I didn't know you were going to be quizzing me about real stuff here.
I was surprised to read that he had vetoed that.
Well, that would surprise me too. And I'll tell you, you know, look back to Roy Barnes and Sonny Perdue. And I'm sure that caught you on the Democratic side of the aisle by surprise. Frankly, it caught us by surprise too. But what were the – it was the flaggers, it was the Northern Arc, and it was the teachers. And that's what everybody believes that cost Roy Barnes the governorship. Well, Nathan Deal is a cautious man. He's not going to make that mistake. If the teachers need to be shored up, they are going to be shored up. And if there's an executive order that he can take, he will take it. Now, tell me about Jason Carter, because, quite frankly, he is a very formidable candidate. Just, and I'm not talking policy. He happens to be my state senator.
What are you doing living in 42, Mike?
I am the Alamo.
You're like deep in the, like that's the, one of the most Democratic districts in the country.
I know. I'm here as the last bastion of conservatism, and as soon as they figure out I'm a bastion, they're going to kick me out.
That's right. I used to live there too.
Yeah. Hey, listen, this is a great little neighborhood I've got. I encourage anyone to live here except for the politics. But no, Jason's been a very good state senator by and large. The thing that I admire most about him is his ability on the campaign trail. He has come to this almost like he was bred for it, and I use that word deliberately. His lineage, his history, his grandfather was president. He knows politics. It's in his bones. He knows campaigning. It's in his bones. And I think Deal has a race on his hands. Now, I may be whistling past the graveyard, but I do believe that in the end, Georgia's not quite blue enough yet to elect a 38-year-old state senator over a former congressman and an attorney and the incumbent governor. But of all of the candidates the Democrats could have put up, I think Jason Carter is absolutely the best one.
Oh, yeah, I think he's as good as we could get. And the thing is, it's when the state is ready to turn. And given to the national trends, you have to think 2014 is too early, the way that turnout trends are looking for, you know, across the country. Would Georgia be faster? Now, you mentioned his age, 38. I don't know if that's a problem in that if you look then at Democratic voters, they're likely to be younger. And then also the fact that he does have, you know, two kids about to be school age. He has a family, and he has to, you know, face traffic like the rest of us, or a lot of folks, at least in metro area. I don't personally have to face much. But you know what I'm saying? He faces those regular guy problems that a lot of people that maybe swing voters face, and so he might have a better shot of saying, I'm one of you, and turning them. Catherine, what's your thought?
Well, I mean, I agree. You know, Jason's a friend of mine and a friend of the show, and I'm not always 100% happy with some of his votes in the legislature, and I think that's probably good because I'm about as far to the left as we can get, and so I understand those votes and have reconciled that with myself. And I think he's a great candidate. I think the thing that I'm not inside Nathan Deal's mind, but I would think the thing that scares him the most is standing on a stage with Jason Carter. Because Jason is young and enthusiastic and limber, both limber physically and mentally. He's very, he's, as he's been on the campaign trail these last few months, his stump speech is getting much smoother. His delivery is getting much more punchy. I think that if there's a debate or more than one debate, that's going to be a big challenge for Governor Deal. I really think so. Even though Governor Deal is very good. I mean, I'm not saying that he's not good, but he's going to look old and tired, and I think that distinction is going to be very marked and very I think that's just been my thought. Those are my thoughts about the whole thing.
Yeah, Catherine, I want to jump in here. I agree with you that I think Jason Carter is so fast on his feet. I think he has an excellent shot at winning a debate, not only against Nathan Deal, but most politicians in Georgia. Here's the biggest challenge, though. Who watches debates anymore at the statewide level? They come on at 6 o'clock on GPTV, and outside of the inside baseball folks like us, I don't know if the regular electorate knows they exist. And therefore, if you win it, who knows about it? I mean, it'd be like if the, you know,
that's
the
a really good point.
Championship was fought in the middle of some woods, and I don't even know who the champion is right now, but if he got whipped and the other guy said, I won, but nobody watched it, is he really champion? Mike,
that's a really good point.
Consultant, does anybody watch these things anymore?
You always want to do well in the debate, no matter what the race or what your candidate is, whether it's a candidate forum for dog catcher in Hayhira or the statewide, you know, a gubernatorial debate. You tend to draw a lot of ceremony and pomp and circumstance and the attention from, you know, the media, and everybody talks about it for 2 or 3 days. What we in our business forget, and when I say our business, I'm talking about the people who pay attention to politics, who are operatives or who are press secretaries or even the media, not really very many voters care. Well, I'm glad to see that. Well, I'm glad to see that. I'll give you a personal example. Within the last week, early voting has started, and I got called from my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, both Democrats, who wanted me to tell them who they should vote for. Now, there's been
tell
millions of
them to call me
dollars.
Next time.
That's what I'm going to do. I said, well, you're voting for Democrats. How should I know? But my point is that even people, that's kind of a serious level of engagement. Keep in mind, probably three-quarters of the electorate, the people who vote by May 20th, on or before May 20th, they haven't even woken up yet. So these ads that you're seeing from Gingrey, from Kingston, from Handel, they are not – they have only laid the groundwork. The real campaign happens over the next 16 days where people are now engaged with, oh, so-and-so's tax returns or – somebody else's ethics charge or, you know, whatever the issue is, whatever the hook is, defines the narrative, and that those hooks haven't been set either in the governor's race or in the Senate race. So, yes, I think once we get past this primary, I think Nathan Deal recalibrates his strategy and says, all right, how do I whoop this kid in a general election? And again, I go back to the age of the voters. The median age of the voter in Georgia is a whole lot closer to Nathan Deal than it is to Jason Carter. And people may think very fondly of Jason Carter, and they should. He's earned it. But it's really tough to trust someone younger than you. And I say that as an old guy. And you want somebody to be a governor, you really want them to have gray hair and a couple of laps around the track under their belt and some experience in life. And Jason's very talented, but I don't think he checks that box for the older voter in Georgia. Again, look, on that one, we've got months to wait.
Yeah, I mean, that thing will play out, and it probably won't go to a runoff on the Republican side. I don't see it, so it starts right after, you know, before Memorial Day. Well, let's hit the high spots on some of these congressional seats, because with 14 of them and not all of them competitive on each side, we don't need to go through them all. But Jack Kingston, that seat's going to open up the coastal Georgia seat, first time in over a decade, close to two decades now, I believe. I think he came in maybe when President Clinton
24
was first
years.
Elected. Yeah, so it's been a while. There's a slew of candidates. Anybody making a lot of noise down there?
I think you've got former state senator Buddy Carter down there, who's got a natural base, who's run, who's doing a very good job. I think you've got a celebrity factor with a guy named John McCollum, who was a protege of Newt Gingrich. He is married to Miss America. I believe you. I think she was the first deaf Miss America. I may be wrong on that, but I think she was the very first. Really, really wonderful gal, Heather McCallum, And they've been sort of active in the political scene since 1998. They're good. And it's sort of, you know, star power versus experienced, trusted. Buddy Carter was not only a former state senator, he was also the mayor of Pooler, Georgia. So he knows how to campaign. He knows how to talk to folks. And that's going to be an interesting one to watch.
That's definitely going to be a runoff.
Yeah,
a lot of candidates. It's also Jeff Chapman, who's a state rep and also had been a state senator, Glenn County Commissioner, truly on that coast. If I'm not mistaken, I was vacationing one time at Jekyll Island, and I saw his yard signs in a yard lawn or two on Jekyll Island. So he's definitely got a good district if you like scenery and warm weather. Well, let's keep moving through to be efficient. And I want to go, since you've talked about living in DeKalb and you know what's going down there, I do want to flip over real quick. District 4, Hank Johnson, somebody you've admitted voting for, is being challenged by the DeKalb County Sheriff, Thomas Brown, probably the most interesting Democratic primary maybe in the state in
right.
a lot of ways.
I don't know
you're
how
there in your interest.
I don't know how y'all feel about that particular race, and I won't call you out on it, but I have to say that as a Republican in DeKalb County, Thomas Brown was one of the very few elected officials that I held in very high regard and respected a lot. And if his campaign is going to be sort of centrist from the left, whereas, you know, a moderate, competent, unquestionable public record of integrity and service, I have no problem if that actually happens, if he's elected. Now, the problem with his race from the political point of view is that Hank Johnson is not... He has not offended anybody. He's committed a couple of gaffes, and maybe they were punchlines that went wrong or whatever. And Republicans like to point and laugh and make the most out of that. But Hank has not offended anybody. He's a traditional liberal, and, you know, you can say, well, I'm tipping over all day long, but that's really not going to anger anyone the way that Cynthia McKinney angered voters. So I think Brown does okay in the parts of the 4th that are in DeKalb County because of his history, because of his record. I think he has a chance to gain on Hank Johnson in the parts of the 4th, Rockdale, et cetera, that are not in DeKalb County. And that's his challenge. So
I just have to say that, I mean, I haven't looked at, I don't know if there's been any polls. I haven't seen any. And I haven't really looked. I haven't been following this these campaigns very closely, but I do know that Hank Johnson is very well liked in his district. He is excellent at constituency services. He shows up to a lot of things. He comes to the DeKalb breakfasts almost every month if he's in town. He's he's always available. He's the couple times that I've been to D.C. to lobby on certain things, he's been available to our whatever group I've been with. So I think it's a challenge for Tom Brown. I think you're right. They're going to make fun of his the joke about the comment about Guam and the comment the sort of general idea that he's a little bit dull. But I do think that for Democrats he almost always votes right, and he's like you said, he's a traditional liberal, but he also is very well liked. He's a very likable
guy. Very well liked, and you pointed out one of his good strengths was being good locally, good on the ground. None of us have mentioned his other big strength, which was President Obama. President Obama is a huge fan of Hank Johnson. And if he comes down to this district and wraps his arms around Johnson, as good as Tom Brown might be, I don't think that I don't think in that district that Thomas Brown can run against President Obama's favorite.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think the blueprint is there is, you know, Thomas Brown, when he got in this race, might have thought, hey, this is like the old DeKalb race when Denise Majette and then Hank Johnson ran against Cynthia McKinney. Hank Johnson is not Cynthia McKinney in any way, shape, or form, and therefore that blueprint doesn't really work the same way. So it's if he wins, he's got to use a much different tactic. Well, let's keep moving through. Paul Brown is vacating that seat, and a slew of Republican candidates are running. I think I've really heard of two of them. I guess I'll say I've heard of one, and I've heard of one's father, so I'll say I've heard of him. What's this thing looking like over in eastern Georgia?
The 10th Congressional District, Paul Brown territory. You've got everybody from Jody Heiss, Mike Collins, who is Matt Collins' son, Donna Sheldon, who is a former state representative from Decula, the Decula area, Gary Girard, full disclosure, former client of mine. Who did I leave off? Did I say Stephen Simpson?
Nope. I don't think so. Mitchell Swan, just a bunch of candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a jump ball headed to a runoff. And the question is, who goes to the runoff? It's looking a whole lot like Jody Heiss, who ran for Congress against, in the 7th District, when that seat opened up, and did a very good job. He's got a lot of very hardcore conservative support in that district. The question is, who gets into the runoff with him? Is it Don Sheldon as a former state legislator who's very well known and a former mayor as well? You gotta wonder about this path from mayor to state rep to Congress. It's looking like it's a smart path for anybody who wants to be a mayor of a small city. But let's see.
Think Mike Collins, he seems to have money. What he's done looks slick. But then, of course, his district and his father's district are not one and the same, the territory.
No, they're not, and they're not the same candidate. I think Matt Collins loves to campaign. I think Mike Collins really doesn't like it quite as much. That's just that's an observer. And I will say, even though he is my former client, that Girard is sort of a dark horse. He's an attorney from Oglethorpe County, just outside of Athens, born and raised there. And if he can find the money to get his message out, I think it will resonate. No disrespect to Donna Sheldon, who I think is a fantastic candidate. And who knows how to campaign very, very well. I think she's probably the one to watch, along with either Heiss or Collins, with Girard being sort of a dark horse.
Yeah.
Well, I have
more,
to say that
go ahead.
That Swan certainly is ambitious. His website is Swan for America.
Right.
Holding on to that, so that when he runs for president, he can have the same website.
I was going to say that district, the Georgia 10th, has never really been tested and vetted and measured as an open seat. Stephen Simpson ran and challenged Paul Brown. And got walloped back in 2012. I think that that's sort of a factor of incumbency and that's sort of a factor of traditional campaigning. But this is a wide open contest now, and you're going to have a lot to parse through on May 21st.
Yeah. Well, kind of continuing a theme, folks running for Congress, vacating their seats. The 11th district, which once again in its current configuration has never really been an open seat because Phil Gingrey, a lot of his district became Tom Graves' old district, or new district, I should say, and it's been vacated. And I think a lot of folks thought Ed Lindsay, Barry Loudermilk, and maybe Tricia Pryor were going to vie over this thing, and Bob Barr had just gotten too far away from his Republican roots, had become too much of a libertarian. But what I've been hearing is Bob Barr may be the front runner and may get the number one seat of the two in the runoff. Have I been getting bad info, Mike?
No, I don't think so. I think Barr's got enough name ID. He's been out in the public often enough and frequently enough that he is well known to those voters in that district. I think Barry Loudermilk, just geographically, has the advantage. From sort of the Cherokee County-based area, the northern end of that district. And they're a very conservative voting base, and he may split them with Barr in the primary. But once it gets to a runoff, you're looking at a distilled, a lower turnout, a distilled voter base. And when I say distilled, I mean like distilled to more purer Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that they'll, tilt towards Barry. Again, I repeat my warning about political predictions. Listen, Ed Lindsay is formidable. There's no doubt about that. Tricia Pridemore has run for Georgia GOP chairman. That's virtually a statewide race. It's just
exactly.
A smaller number of voters, but she knows what she's doing. So the 11th. Once you say Barr and, you're only left with a question mark.
Yeah. I get the funny feeling.
Go ahead.
I look at this and I say that, you know, if you could look and you could take some of these candidates out of some races where you have three and four candidates and drop them in other races, like, for instance, if you were to take the number three or even two person out of this race, drop them into the number 10 district, that person that finishes third in the 11th might finish first in the 10th just because they seem like they have better candidates in the 11th. Is that a crazy thought?
Well, unfortunately, we can't do that.
I'm not saying we won't to.
Well,
I'm just saying.
You know, Lee, and constitutionally, you actually could because you don't have to live in the congressional district to actually run for it. I think we have a candidate in Georgia who's also running as a candidate in some other state somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Hawaii.
Kind of a kooky guy, yeah.
Isn't he running in, like, five states?
He did last time, I think, two this time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Alan Levine, he's running. I think he's the other guy on the 11th, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we don't like his chances. We didn't make him.
Well,
listen,
I think,
if I thought I had a chance of getting elected congressman from Hawaii, I would.
But I would stay in my district and I never go to Washington. That's the only problem.
Exactly. I telecommute.
I think the thing that's going to be important in these runoffs is that it's a long time from May 20th to July 22nd.
And
they're going to have to either decide to just be quiet for the first month and then spend their money in the last, you know, in the last month, or, I mean, I don't know. The time between the primary is almost as long as the time from qualifying to voting, right? Almost.
Yep, yep.
Not quite. But
May 20th to July 22nd is a very, very long time. And I think most of your candidates, you know, they're going to spend that week, that Wednesday starting May 21st through that Saturday, they're going to sleep. They're going to rest. They're going to go visit their families. They're going to go do whatever they need to do to decompress. And then they will gear up for the runoff. Their staffs, they don't get that option. Their staffs are going to have to go to work immediately, coming up with plans, reaching out to voters, trying to secure endorsements from people who finished third in the primary. It's going to be utter hell for those people.
And they're
going
to have to raise a bunch of money, too.
Yeah, just to burn it, like it was burning in a campfire pile.
Exactly. It's going to be like, let's burn, you know, $150,000, $200,000 or more.
For a primary runoff?
Well, aren't they going to be have to be on TV?
It depends on district to district.
It depends on district, exactly.
Sure. District to district. I think that's right. I think the statewide runoffs for the Senate campaign, I think they're back up into seven figures again.
Yeah.
Because now you're going to have to take those primary voters and get them back out again, and you're going to have to convince anybody who showed up for the primary to come back for the runoff, and I think the primary electorate is going to be larger than we've ever seen in Georgia before, I think.
Plus, you're fighting vacations.
Right.
July 22nd.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have to really push for absentee and early voting. I think that's going to, if the campaigns that successfully move people to, you know, early vote and vote essentially, you know, by mail, absentee voting, are going to, if they can do that, are going to be more successful.
And I'll tell you, nobody knows that better than Karen Handel. She lost the runoff for governor by 2,500 votes and change, which translates into, and I mean this exactly, one vote out of every precinct in Georgia. One vote out of every precinct in Georgia goes for Handel instead of Deal, and we're talking about Governor Handel instead of Governor Deal. And Governor Deal knows that. But Karen Handel knows that as well.
Yeah, and they'll be, of course, totally different races. They could actually run as a ticket together, of all things. Well, Mike, we've enjoyed having you on the Kudzu Vine. We lied to you. I think we said we wouldn't be quite the whole hour. We're just shy of it. But want to thank you again. If you want to promote the Peach Pundit or anything else you do, we'll give you that chance as you close off.
Hey, listen, I appreciate it. Everybody, please read peachpundit.com, and we have a daily newsletter, which is a real pain in my neck to try to produce. So,
and I guess you got in a little bit of trouble with that this week, huh?
I certainly have, but more than once. But if you want to subscribe and find out what's going on and what's going to happen, peachpundit.com is the place to read about it. And you email me a link, and I'll promote this broadcast as well.
Sure thing. We'll send it to you. Well, thanks again, Mike, for being on.
Thanks,
hey,
Mike.
Thank
tell
you
your in-laws to call me next time.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, that was Mike Hassinger of Peach Pundit. He also is political consultant on the Republican side. And, of course, lives inside the perimeter. And, of course, we talk so much about inside the perimeter and outside the perimeter. There's an inside the perimeter voter that's Republican, which kind of changes the dynamic. Catherine, we've got like a minute and a half. I want to get to just one of the topics that will definitely get a hold before next week, but it's certainly an exciting one. The unemployment rate, 6.3%. It doesn't matter who you are in politics. That's good that people are working. But do you think that'll have a positive political impact for Democrats, since they always say, you know, if you're, you know, the unemployment rate drops, whoever's in office, if the president reaps the benefits? Do you get the sense that it's going to be a big boost for us?
I think that is going to play in as well as the, you know, success of the Affordable Care Act as people move forward with their coverage. And just overall, you know, the stock market had a good week too. I think overall, you know, improving or the sense of an improving economy and job growth, I think that all helps all our Democrats.
Yeah, I want to see. I'm not going to get too optimistic, but I want to see how this correlates. I know the president's approval rating actually went down, but, of course, the approval rating next week or the week after was going to reflect this, and does it bounce? And that's where you can really tell. I don't think this is going to be, hey, we're going to win back the House and gain in the Senate kind of news politically, but maybe it'll kind of, you know, stop the bleeding, if you will, and we might win a Senate seat or two that we wouldn't have, or win a House seat here and there. governorship here and there, but not a major shift yet. But it's going to be something to watch. Well, once again, been a good show. Mike Hassinger, don't know who we'll have next week. I do know 2 weeks from now we're set to have some big North Carolina talk after their primary, but that's at least a week away. But until then, for the Cozy Vine.
Good night, everybody.
Evening.
Thanks, David.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united...